Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Paul O'Brien, and we will be talking about his book, Great Decisions, Perfect Timing, Cultivating Intuitive Intelligence. In this unique book about discovering and living out one's destiny, Paul distills a lifetime of business and personal challenges, risk-taking, adventure, and trial and error into an eloquently articulated process for making the best strategic decisions with an ever-improving sense of timing. His true stories of lessons learned will intrigue and delight the reader with a presentation of the skills required to become a visionary decision maker. Paul's elegant visionary decision-making process and philosophy clearly define the essential skills of intuition-driven decision-making and teaches readers how to take charge of their lives and make better decisions that move them toward the realization of their goals or dreams. For more information about Paul and this book and other books, his podcast, his blog, you can find all of that is at his website, which is divination.com. And I do have a direct link to that website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Paul to the show. Good day, sir.
Thank you, Robert. Happy to be here.
Great. Well, I'm looking forward to learning a little bit more about this visionary decision-making process. But before we start, I usually like to have the guests kind of give a little bit of a background about their journey, and in your case, how you got to this place with divination as a focus.
Okay, I'd be happy to. I grew up in the Bay Area, and I grew up during the 70s, came of age, and I was introduced to a divination system at the age of 19, and it was the I Ching, the Chinese Book of Changes. And what is a divination system? Well, a divination system is a way of accessing the collective unconscious by generating a synchronistic occurrence and then interpreting that to think between the lines, or think outside the box around problems that logic can't handle. So the I Ching is probably the oldest classical divination system, but ones that are better known are things like the runes or tarot cards, which basically operate along the same principles. But I was introduced to the I Ching when I was 19 years old as an undergrad at the University of California. And I was studying the martial arts, and I was interested in everything Eastern at that time, meditation and yoga, that kind of thing. And so I took an interest in it, and this girl showed it to me, and I thought, well, she was kind of cute, and I wanted to spend time around her, and I was kind of making fun of the whole thing. And she said, here, try it, you know, ask a question and cast the coin. So I did, but it wasn't really serious, and I was kind of making fun of it in a smart alecky sort of way. And lo and behold, I got the reading back, hexagram number 4, which is entitled Youthful Folly, the Student Lacks Respect for the Teacher. And I thought, what? What's going on here? You know, let me try that again. So I wanted to try it this time. Now, my intention was different this time. My intention was a little sharper. I still didn't have any energy on my particular question. But I was testing it, and so I did it again, and it ignored my question again because I had no investment in it anyway, and it came back and with the text that said, questioning the sincerity of the seeker. I thought, oh, my God, now it's testing me. So I made fun of it. It made fun of me. I tested it. It tested me. I thought, wow, this thing is an energetic mirror, and I was kind of hooked, and then I became very interested in it. And I'm a kind of a studious fellow. I've always got good marks in school, and so I studied it, and I've been studying it my whole life. And then a few years later, so that was one of the fascinations of my youth. And another fascination arose a few years later when I got a job at a computer center. This was in the mid-70s, and the computer would take up this entire room with huge mag tapes and just one tiny little terminal, but it was called a mini computer. But I was just fascinated by this whole phenomenon of software, because my friend and I, my friend who was the programmer there, we would go in the middle of the night or late at night, and when the place was locked up, and go in there and commandeer this huge computer to play this video game. And this is like in the early 70s, this is before Apple even existed. But there was one game that had been designed at MIT called Space War, and we would play it on this little terminal attached to this huge computer, $150,000 computer, that has less computing power than my iPhone does now. It's amazing how things have changed, and I've been in the computer business the whole time. But in any case, I was fascinated by this idea that somebody could write code and deliver an interactive experience, an immersive experience, like a game. And I started to imagine all the other things that computers could possibly do in the future. I was having dreams about and visions about multimedia in 1974. And that was like 20 years before CD-ROMs even existed. So I was hooked on that too. So I got a job there as a secretary because I can type. So I started at the bottom. I was a college dropout. And I quickly, you know, learned enough and became a software marketing specialist. And that was my career for the next 15 years until in the late 80s, I was the VP of marketing for a startup, about a 40-person startup, doing high-tech software for the Macintosh. And then it was so stressful at work during this one period that I thought, gosh, I sure wish I could. I started taking the I Ching to work. The book, you know, it's a big book, and you have the coins. Mm-hmm. You know, I was the only non-engineer in the whole company. I mean, I had a few salespeople who worked for me, but I was the marketing guy. And I had to find a private place and cast these coins and get a reading in the book just to maintain my sanity because of how dysfunctional the company was. And then it occurred to me, gosh, I wish I could do this on the computer. And so I thought, well, why not? I mean, the Macintosh has got a graphical interface. Maybe I could breathe into those dreams that I had about creating multimedia. Like, for instance, maybe we could have a Japanese garden scene and have an animated waterfall and have some sounds that were soothing. I got all excited. And so then I hired a programmer and an artist out of my life savings and created what turned out to be one of the first multimedia programs. This was back in the 80s, like I said, before CD-ROMs even existed. And it was for the Macintosh, and I called it Synchronicity. And in the process, I had to also come up with my own I Ching text because I didn't have the rights to any of the books that had been translated into English. So I had to make my own. So that was my first entry into becoming an author. And I designed and produced this software, first time I'd ever done that, that gave you a way to cast an I Ching reading using a mouse instead of three coins. And it was about the dumbest product idea from a business point of view ever. Uh-huh. In 1989 when we released it, or was it 88, the only people buying software, first of all, were accountants and engineers. They didn't know what the I Ching was, and people who knew what the I Ching was didn't buy software. They didn't even like computers. There was no email. There was no World Wide Web in 1989. So it was not a really smart business idea, but it was just a labor of love. I was fascinated by the I Ching, and I was fascinated by multimedia, and one day I had this inspiration to combine the two fascinations and came up with a multimedia version of the I Ching, and I called it Synchronicity. So that was my first product, and that's as an entrepreneur. and I launched a company to market that crazy little program. And I used direct marketing to do it. And I would send out direct mail, like a million pieces, and I'd say, successful millionaires know how to make the right moves at the right time. Now you can too. I didn't say anything about his spiritual heritage. I didn't say anything about archetypes. Or, I mean, I said a little bit about Jungian psychology, but I didn't. I basically just called it an intuitive decision-making tool that helped to stimulate the intuition around problems that logic can't handle. And it was so damn cute, and it was so unusual that people would buy it. And I got it into Egghead Software on the shelf, and people would buy it, and then they'd keep it. And so it was like $39 and it was a little package. And that was how I started as an entrepreneur, the most unlikely entrepreneur. And I'll tell you, Robert, I didn't have any fantasies about making a lot of money selling I Ching software. I just wanted to do something that I thought was meaningful and cool. And so I actually left my job. I did consulting for a couple of years just to keep the cash flow up, but I left money in favor of meaning. And that's kind of the story I tell in the book, Great Decisions, Perfect Timing, about that whole story and about how to leverage what I learned in order to make better decisions and improve your timing to manifest whatever your heart desires by tapping into your intuitive intelligence. So it's all about intuitive intelligence. Yeah. And I've learned a lot since then. And since then, I added later on, that company went bankrupt, obviously it was going to go bankrupt. And then I later on resurrected it when CD-ROMs came around because I still loved it. And I added a tarot card program, and then a few years after that, I added astrology to my software mix, and then we went on the web in 1999 and created an e-commerce site where people could buy readings or give themselves, basically they would give themselves readings by picking their own tarot cards or tossing the coins on the I Ching or dialing up an astrology report. And to make a long story short, it became the world's largest, after 13 years of not paying myself half the time and barely keeping it together, it became the world's largest astrology website. And we were driving AOL horoscopes and Yahoo horoscopes at the end when I sold it. And then we started to be pursued. And like I said, I never had an exit strategy. I never thought it would, you know, be a big money maker. I just wanted to make ends meet. My dream was just to be, to have the creative freedom to produce and market products that I personally liked and enjoyed and found meaning in. That's all I was trying to do. I didn't have an exit strategy. I never expected it to be worth a lot of money. But we ended up selling it for millions and millions of dollars, and I owned the whole thing because I couldn't ever get anybody to invest in it.
Yeah.
And I don't blame them.
Well,
it was a crazy idea. But anyway, it just goes to show you how when you follow your heart, when you do what you love, amazing things can happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, from the way you described it, it was up and down. I mean, it was a struggle, but it was something that your heart desired. So that would have been the driving force behind it.
Oh, yeah. There were many, many dark nights of the soul where I was staring bankruptcy in the face. And I always, you know, I always knew that, well, in the worst case, I could go back to getting a job in my career, you know. So that was my only safety net.
Yeah, yeah. Well, now with Great Decisions, do you feel that that decision-making and the processes behind it are more important these days? I mean, do you feel that there's been an increased importance in that particular process?
Well, I think it's a more critical skill than ever, this decision-making skill, because these days we have to make more decisions in a year than our grandparents had to make in 10 years. And because things are changing so fast and we have so many more choices and we're expected to respond so much more quickly given technology and communications technology, it's sort of like we're on the spot all the time and we're faced with a plethora of choices, and we're also bombarded by information on all channels, half of it just bad, half of it, false. And so I think it's harder to make decisions than ever before, but it's also more crucial because the decision-making capability that human beings have is our highest leverage skill. And that's why we pay CEOs a fortune to execute it, as well as give politicians an enormous amount of power. It's because it's so important. Nothing determines our success and happiness in life more than the quality of the decisions we make. And you might think that being the only species that can visualize different possible outcomes to different possible decisions, we would be really good at it by now. But au contraire, we're either too emotional or we're over-analytical and we don't, or we're trusting on wishful thinking or bad information. There's so many ways to go wrong at a time in history when we need this skill more than ever. So, yeah, I think it is more important than it's ever been. And the fate of the world.
Yeah, very much. Very much so. So do you feel that, you know, those aspects like the emotional aspect and, you know, that logic, do you think that those are the elements that lead people to make, bad decisions or decisions that really don't forward their cause. And do you think that by people viewing their, quote, bad decisions inhibits them from even trying to make this important decisions that they really need to make?
Oh, yeah. I think people, there's all kinds of ways. I mean, procrastination is a huge problem, and it's pretty understandable that people would be reluctant to make decisions at all, given that they're confused and bombarded with all kinds of bad information or questionable information. I think, and then of course, the more poor quality decisions you make, the easier it is to make even more of them, until you've backed yourself into a corner where you're desperate, and you're really going to make a bad decision. You could end up in jail or dead if you make enough bad decisions in a row. The point is, if you make poor decisions, you're going to be more inclined to make more poor decisions. Whereas if you can just slightly improve the decisions you make, it's going to get easier for you to make better and better decisions. Now, what is the definition of a good decision? Well, a good decision is one that gets you the outcome that you want. And so if you have a clear vision, there's all these steps. I have this process in the book called the Visionary Decision-Making Process, or VDM, and there's all of these steps that add up to being able to do what I call visionary decisions. And these are the big life-changing decisions that govern, junctures in a person's, or passages in a person's life. Like, should I marry this guy? Or should I change careers now? Or should we move to Baltimore? Whatever. Big decisions like that. There's not that many of them in life, but they're life-changing. Probably the first big decision that we're empowered to make, and not all of us are empowered to make it, is, where do I want to go to college? I mean, if indeed you're lucky enough to be able to go to college. So until then, you don't really have any big decisions that you're allowed to make until you become college age. And then in your 20s, you start developing an independent sense of self, and you start discovering what you're fascinated by. You follow your nose. You try things. Now, I call that stage one of life. And I divide life into three stages. And stage one goes until you're 29 and a half. And it basically is about discovering who you are, what you're good at, and what you love to do. And the way to do that, according to my recommendation, is to try things and experiment and job hop and date around. That's the way to do it. Not make a commitment to a career at the age of 19. You don't even know who you are. And to make a commitment to a career or a career path that's going to put you $100,000 in debt just to get the education, that's not a good idea for most people. And it creates a lot of lifetime suffering when you have that kind of monkey on your back of a debt like that. So the decisions that you make during stage one are the visionary decisions, or they may not be that visionary, but it's basically, what do I want to try next? You know, or what skill have I discovered that I really like that I would like to start developing? Those are the things that ought to happen in stage one. Then in stage two, which I call the builder-provider stage, that's where you make a commitment. You make a commitment to a career path or to some cause or to raising a family, whatever it is, and you make a commitment to it and you develop mastery at it. You try to become as good as you can be with that skill that you've decided is the one that suits you the most, because you like it or you're good at it or both. And then you provide for yourself and maybe for others, like children or whatever. And then stage three is the patron stage. That starts around age 59. And that's where you operate as a teacher and a mentor and a grandparent. You're basically supporting future generations, sharing your wisdom, maybe financial support, and I call that the patron stage. So your decisions then are, what is the highest and best way for me to give back? And what is it that I have to teach? What is my legacy? And what do I want my legacy to be? So that's a stage three decision. And hopefully people have the freedom to go there, because they're not struggling to make ends meet into old age.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the way I have looked at the decision-making in the book. And then there's a whole lot of chapters that have to do with cultivating intuitive intelligence so that you can access the intuition when you need it most. And that is not so easy.
With the visionary decision making process, the VDM, in the essence of it, does it shift then depending on the particular stage that one is in?
Yeah, well, no,
or
the decisions
the process is similar throughout the stages.
Yeah, the decisions change, and you know, we're making different kinds of decisions when we're 60 than we're making when we're 25, because we're in a different stage of life, and our, you know, our brain is more developed, intuition is more developed over time. So the problem is cultivating intuitive intelligence is a lifetime project, because and the idea is to be able to access the intuition when we need it most. And that's really hard to do, because when we need it most is when we're having strong feelings like fear or strong desire. And these things actually interfere with our ability to hear the still small voice of intuition or the subtle sense of a gut feeling that intuition is trying to come to us through. So what is intuition? Intuition is kind of an instinctive form of intelligence where we know things directly, and it bypasses the rational mind. It's not dependent upon logical analysis, but it can work with logical analysis. And in fact, I have in the book some really good exercises for developing the logical side of it, the logical side of decision making, and bringing it into alignment and bringing your intuition to bear with that. So there's the both of those. There's two questions that you have to answer with any strategic decision. Now, I call it visionary decision making. You could call it strategic decision making. And the two questions you have to answer are the what and the when. The what question is, what is the best next move that I could make? So it's, you're like a chess player and you're thinking two moves ahead or three moves ahead, or maybe you've got two moves that you could make. So you have to answer the what question. Well, logic can help with that. Logic can help with that. Intuition helps too, because you can anticipate what the other person's going to do, and that's kind of intuitive. But the when question, and this applies to the decisions we make in life, we don't have to execute the decision as soon as we make it. Sometimes it's good to wait for the right time. And that's the timing question, the when question. That is 100% intuitive. So if you cultivate intuitive intelligence, which is the subtitle of the book and what it's all about, you're going to automatically be developing better timing, because timing is an intuitive question and you're going to have a better intuition. So that's the visionary decision-making process is led by intuition, but it's tempered by logic, and it has everything to do with manifesting a vision that you had. Like, I had the vision of creating something, creating a product line that was meaningful to me, that I would be really happy to be marketing, producing, and marketing. Whereas up until then, I was marketing high-tech communication software, and it was incredibly, it was just totally sterile. It was just 100% technical, and It didn't inspire. I mean, it was good stuff, and it did a job that was important, and it was part of the evolution of software, but it was highly technical stuff, and it didn't have a lot of soul. And I wanted to do something that was meaningful to me, and so I had to like call up that vision that I had that, oh, there's this new kind of software that could be developed. So I was kind of like a product visionary, kind of like Steve Jobs in my own really small way, where I would envision products that had never existed and where no marketing research could possibly have validated that it would go anywhere, because nobody could imagine it, and then just do it because I had a feeling about how it would work and how it would feel and how it could make people feel, and that was my vision. And so I had a clear vision that inspired me and it was all about intuition, because dreaming is an intuitive function. Dreaming is not a logical function, as you can tell if you ever remember your dreams. They're not logical. And so, you know, bringing that intuitive function to bear in a creative way and then becoming innovative as a result of that and creating something new, whether it's a business or a cause or writing a book, that really requires a visionary mindset, and that is a function of intuition.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to take just a quick break, Paul, and I do want to invite listeners, if you would like to call in and ask Paul any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those of you listening in the chat room, if you have any questions, feel free to post them there. And then when we come back, Paul, you talked about cultivating intuitive intelligence. And in your book, you also talk about predictive intelligence. So I kind of would like to find out a little bit more about that when we come back, okay?
Okay.
Okay, great. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very short break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp.
I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,200 shows we have had over the past 7 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide, books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store. Our show is available as a free podcast on iTunes, and you can subscribe for free at the iTunes Store, or even quicker, there is a link on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc., and we also have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show. Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. And again, just a reminder, our show and podcast has been added to TuneIn, the TuneIn app. So you can get that anywhere, and also available on Amazon's Echo and Google Home. So again, today my very special guest is Paul O'Brien, and we're talking about his book, Great Decisions, Perfect Timing, Cultivating Intuitive Intelligence. And again, you can find out more about Paul and his work by visiting his website, which is divination.com. And again, I do have a direct link to that website in the show page description. Okay, so with that, we're back, Paul.
Okay. Happy.
Okay, great. So predictive intelligence, what's that about?
Well, the ability to make predictions is probably the most popular idea that humanity's ever had. I mean, anybody who can predict the future is going to have a leg up on everybody else, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what people have looked to divination systems to give them a sense of the future. And that's why people like gypsies and psychics, you know, have basically laid claim to tarot cards and astrology to buttress their claims as to be able to tell the future or read somebody's mind. And I wrote a whole book on divination about how it works and what it's good for. And I basically am not a big fan of the fortune-telling genre. And I've never promoted divination as a way to tell the future, but it does have predictive intelligence built into it. And like, for instance, in the case of the I Ching, which is sometimes pronounced I Ching because it's two words, the letter I followed by the word Ching, which means book of changes in Chinese. It's the oldest book in the world. And you use coins and you look at the pattern and you get an archetype. And so that archetype will give you a reflection on the present moment, just like I got the archetype about, you know, youthful folly. And then I got the other archetype that was testing my sincerity. So there's a set of archetypes in the I Ching. There's 64 of them. And in tarot cards, there's 78 cards. Each one's an archetype. And so in the I Ching, you get an archetype that gives you a reflection of the present moment. That's basically a reflection of where you are right now. But you also get an archetype of the future. And basically, though, that's not predicting the future. It's sort of giving you an idea of which way the wind is blowing. So you get a predictive sense, and you get a sense of where you can go if you follow the advice of the oracle, if you follow the advice of the I Ching or the tarot cards. The tarot, they've got a lot of positions that have to do with, in certain spreads, that have to do with the future or the near future or mm-hmm. the far future. And people use that to kind of get a sense of where things are headed. But I want to make it clear, Robert, that these things are not predictive. They can't be counted on to predict the future. They can give you an idea of which way the wind is blowing. They can inspire you to move in certain directions, but ultimately, the creation of your life is up to you. We are co-creators, and we have free will. We have agency. We may, and how does agency show up? By the decisions that we make. So really, your destiny is impacted, of course, by the society that you're born into, the type of family that you're born into, and it's also constrained by evolution. You know, we have a tricky brain, and it's not our fault. So we have certain constraints. When I say we have a tricky brain, I mean we've got the old brain, and then evolution has been patching on top of that for millions of years because you can't start over. You know, if you have software and then you know, over time, so I'm familiar with the software industry. So if you have software product like a word processor and you're selling it, and over time people discover bugs and then you fix those bugs, and so you're constantly patching this thing. Years go by and then you add a couple features. People want new features. And so you're extending it. So you're patching it and you're extending it. You're patching it and you're extending it. And then after 5 years go by, you ask yourself, oh, my God, should we do it some more? You know, somebody's come up with, found another bug, or somebody's got another feature that we really should add. Should we just keep extending this thing or patching this thing? Or should we just start over now that we know what all the bugs are, and what all the features we need are? We can just start over and have a really clean piece of software that we can support much more easily. And so you can do that with software, but evolution can't do that with the brain. So it's patching, it's extending, it's patching. And so we still have an old brain. We've got that old lizard brain, and we've got the mammalian brain, and then we've got this wonderful neocortex, which is huge, and which distinguishes us from every other animal other than maybe dolphins and whales, who also have huge cortexes. But so we've got a tricky brain, and this is a handicap, because a lot of times, you know, you when you don't need it, and this interferes with intuition. Intuition is a very higher instinct of the brain, but you can't access intuition if you're having strong feelings of fear. And the old brain is highly calibrated to protect us. And so it generates these strong feelings of fear. Like you can't find your keys and you're going to be late for a very important meeting that meant a lot to you. And so then you have a panic attack as if, you know, you're going to be attacked by a saber-toothed tiger. That's the old brain acting out. You know, and it's not that easy to stay conscious and to stay on top of that. So we have handicaps that we have to accept, but beyond that, you know, we have a lot of ability to up-level our consciousness and to raise our consciousness through learning and through making decisions, through experimenting, through trial and error. It's really up to us. Our future, our destiny is really up to us, and we have the wherewithal to overcome our limitations of our conditioning, the way we were brought up, the things we were taught to believe. I've got a whole chapter in the book called Belief Engineering, which is about how to upgrade your beliefs. You know, so many of the things that we believe, we're not even conscious that we believe them. You know, like, for instance, I used to have a belief that still haunts me sometimes, where I had this belief, well, I have to be perfect in order to be lovable. I can't afford to make any mistakes, and if I do everything exactly right, I'm going to, maybe if I'm lucky, I'll get a few crumbs of love. So that's a kind of a belief that can be a very limiting belief, and you put so much pressure on yourself that you actually do worse than if you weren't so worried about being perfect. So we have to learn to take responsibility for what we believe, but it's not our fault that we were taught these things when we were too young to know any better, and we've been carrying these beliefs around ever since. So, yeah, we have homework. You know, it's up to us. We have a lot of, you know, it really, the future is up to us. So predictive intelligence is related to decision-making and the faith that if you make better decisions, your future is going to get better.
Yeah, absolutely. And for the listeners, I do want to point them toward your blog, because you do have a really good blog post about that tricky brain. So people who want to kind of read more about that can go to the blog and read that. And now we've only got about five more minutes left. So I want to spend this on the topic of that when. You talked about what and when and timing. So one of the things you talk a lot about is synchronicity. So would you mind sharing with us your view of what synchronicity is, and how does that fit into the overall scheme of you know, either decision making or just the whole idea of the path that we're on?
Right. Well, synchronicity was a term that was defined by the great psychologist Carl Jung. And I have a whole chapter on it in the book, Great Decisions, Perfect Timing, where I define it and help people learn how to leverage it. Synchronicity is the definition of perfect timing. Synchronicity means that everything is related in time as well as in space. Now, in Western science, we know that everything is related in space, and you know, the second law of thermodynamics, and for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction, etc. But we don't really factor in time at all. You know, if we do a controlled experiment on Tuesday at noon and we do that same controlled experiment in the middle of the night on Saturday, we expect it to come out exactly the same. The time doesn't make any difference. We don't even factor it in. But timing is hugely important. It's not so important when you're doing scientific experiments that are designed to figure out what things are made of and how things can be taken apart and put back together in novel ways, which has helped us a tremendous amount. I think it's beautiful, but it's not going to help us in the arena of relationships or office politics or negotiations or rituals or campaigns or deciding when to make the next move, timing questions. You know, these are the things that where timing is everything. You know, they say timing is everything. Well, synchronicity means that things that seem like they are coincidental are actually meaningful. So it's the phenomenon of meaningful coincidence. And I'm sure everybody's had this happen where you know, you've picked up the phone to call somebody, and lo and behold, there they are. Your phone didn't even have a chance to ring. They were just calling you. And so that's a synchronicity. Or, you know, there's so many stories of just like the most incredible paradoxical things that happen that you could never expect. Coincidences. So as you start to become more intuitive, you notice these things more. And so it seems like they're happening more, but they're not really happening more. Synchronicities are happening all the time. It's the way the universe works. Everything's happening perfectly according to plan, and it's in sync with everything else. It's just that we don't have a big enough consciousness to be aware of it. So the more aware we become of synchronicities, and the more that we credit them, like in the Bible, they talk about signs and omens. Those are synchronicities. Those are signals. Those are signals from the universe. They have meaning. So we tend to notice them more instead of just dismissing them as mere coincidences. And we can learn something from them or take it as a sign that we're supposed to change direction or we're supposed to accelerate or we're supposed to retreat. So we can learn to take advantage of synchronicity by becoming more aware of it. And that's what I've tried to do in this book, is increase the awareness of synchronicity and help people track them in their own lives so that they don't miss any of the signals that could help them so much.
Yeah. Yeah, I know whenever I experience those moments, I always just stop and say thank you, you know, because sometimes I'm hard to get through to, and you know, I just kind of and just take a second to kind of reflect, you know. I mean, and it's always for me, it just seems it's just that confirmation that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing or meeting whoever I'm supposed to meet. It's just I'm in the right place at the right time, you know. And you know, like you say, they're happening all the time, but you know, sometimes that awareness threshold, you know, can use improvement for some of us.
Right, right. Yeah, no. Well, you're doing the right thing. That's fantastic. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're down toward the end of the show, Paul. But before we go, I did want listeners to know that you are also the producer and the host of Pathways Radio and Podcast. And for almost 35 years, that's an amazing long time. So would you mind just sharing with the listeners a little bit about the podcast, what your focus is?
I'd love to. You know, the Pathways Radio and Podcast is a show that we're going into our 35th year, and it's broadcast in Oregon, in Southern Washington, via KBOO.FM, but it's also podcast via iTunes. It's called Pathways, or you can look it up under Paul O'Brien. And every week for the last 30-some years, I've interviewed authors in the area of personal development and cultural evolution. It's not that different from what you're doing, Robert, bringing inspiration to earth. That's could have been a great name for my radio show. But we call it Pathways. And people can go to my website, divination.com, divination.com, and they can hear or they can listen to any one of the last 300 interviews that I've done on the show. And it's a range of topics, but it has to do with personal development or cultural evolution. And that's really the theme of my nonprofit. When I sold my company, I started a nonprofit called the Divination Foundation, which published my book and which syndicates my podcast. And I invite people, if they want to hear, they're short programs, they're only a half hour, and there's a ton of them. And there's an index so that you can go search for or scan them to see which ones that you would like to listen to. And I think it's such a labor of love for me. I understand what you're doing because I'm on that side of the mic most of the time myself. And it's just such a great privilege to visit with people who know stuff that I don't know or who have explored things more deeply than I have in certain areas that are related to personal development and cultural evolution. So basically, I'm trying to be a change agent for cultural evolution. And part of that is personal development. And I think personal development is a lifelong project. It's never done. It's what we're here to do. It's the most important thing is to grow into yourself. And it involves taking risks. It involves making visionary decisions sometimes. And so I think I'll end today's conversation with my slogan, which is, take the risks that grow you. And the interviews we have on Pathways have a lot of examples of people doing exactly that, taking the risks that grow you. If a risk is going to grow you, even if it doesn't get the outcome in the external world that you would hope for, but you're going to grow from it, then it's worth taking.
Yeah. I agree with that. Well, thank you, Paul, for your time. I really enjoyed speaking with you. It's really been fun and very informative, and I'm sure my listeners feel the same way. So, again, thank you for your time today.
It's been a great pleasure.
Great. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Paul O'Brien, and we've been talking about his book, Great Decisions, Perfect Timing, Cultivating Intuitive Intelligence. Again, you can find out more by visiting his website, which is divination.com. There is a direct link to that website in the show page description. And on his website, again, you can find out more about his podcast, books, blog, and resources, and all kinds of good information. So definitely go check it out. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Bite Radio Me. And our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.